Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's been a week of high stakes neck and neck and political nods. Barack Obama picked up 8 straight wins and campaigned hard for next week's primary in Wisconsin.
Our dreams will not be deferred, and our future will not be denied, and our time for change has come. Thank you very much, Madison. I love you guys. Thank you.
Hillary Clinton got late good news from New Mexico and looked ahead to her big bets on Ohio and Texas, campaigning hard in the Longhorn State.
I offer to you the opportunity to be with me, to work with me, to stand with me, so we can make history.
President Bush gave John McCain a nod of approval.
I know his convictions, I know the principles that drive him. And no doubt in my mind, he's a true conservative.
And baseball star Roger Clemens testified before Congress trying to make it plain.
Let me be clear. I have never taken steroids or HGH.
This hour, On Point, our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines. Joining me this week from Washington is Margaret Tolliv, national political correspondent for McClatchy Newspapers, Miami Herald, Sacramento Bee, Kansas City Star, and a lot more. Margaret, great to have you. Thanks for being here again.
Hello, Tom.
With us from Denver, Colorado, is Alicia Caldwell, editorial board writer for the Denver Post. Denver will host the Democratic Convention this August. 2 weeks ago, the Denver Post endorsed Hillary Clinton for president. Alicia, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And with us from Madison, Wisconsin, we're joined by Mark Pitch, government and politics reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. On Tuesday, Wisconsin holds its presidential primary vote. Mark, welcome.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for inviting me.
Got a lot on the table here. Margaret Tolliv, we'll go out in the field here to Denver and Madison, but first to you in Washington. Let's look at this Obama-Clinton race for a moment. Obama has had a string of wins, primaries, caucuses, 8 by my count, but Hillary's looking at Ohio and Texas. Where are we in this Democratic race now?
Well, It's too close to make any predictions, and every time I try to make a prediction, I've been wrong. I've been wrong in Iowa. I've been wrong in New Hampshire. Every time I think I know what's going to happen. I'll tell you that I'm looking at the same numbers you are. The momentum has obviously been with Senator Obama. Senator Clinton obviously has to work very hard and must do extremely well in Texas and Ohio to stay in the game, but it's still up to the superdelegates.
Mark Pitch, take us into the Wisconsin scene for a moment. You're just a couple of days away from your vote there. What do the polls, what does polling show? What's it look like for the Democrats?
There's been some limited polling here, some of it not with the kind of methodology that I always trust. It's as little as 250 people being
That's
polled.
Small, yeah.
But they one thing that jumps out at me is that these polls do show anywhere between 8% and 14% of the Democrats who are likely voters are undecided. So the polls consistently will show Barack Obama with a 2-3-4 point lead, but with so many people undecided and Wisconsin being such a diverse state, it's really too hard to tell. Barack Obama is making a really hard push. We're seeing a lot of him here. A lot of his surrogates are here. He's got young actors going around to college campuses yesterday and today, for example, on his behalf. But Hillary Clinton's not scheduled to arrive in the state until Saturday.
Is Wisconsin looking at Hillary Clinton as having written the state off then, or she's got bigger fish to fry? What?
There is. I think there's a desire for people to see her. Chelsea Clinton was here on Monday and Tuesday and visited some of the college towns. Former President Clinton made 3 or 4 or 5 stops in Wisconsin yesterday on behalf of his wife. But there is there's a desire to see Senator Clinton herself. She's been challenging Senator Obama to debate in Wisconsin and has sort of hung the first few days here of the campaigning in Wisconsin on that. I don't know how much that resonates compared to, you know, when Barack Obama has visited a dozen different states by now.
Alicia Caldwell, in Denver, you've got the whole Democratic convention tumbling into your city in August. Your paper came out a couple of weeks ago. Your editorial board, which includes you, to endorse Hillary Clinton. What are you expecting at this point? I mean, we've got now a lead in pledged delegates by Barack Obama, different numbers by different counts. But, of course, all the superdelegates sit out there. Do you expect this might yet roll all the way into your Denver lap unresolved at the convention?
It surely seems like a strong possibility, and what an exciting convention it would be. It hasn't happened in a long time. Expectations are pretty high around here, and preparations have been underway for a year, you know, for the DNC.
On your editorial board, give us a sense of the debate that went on there. You say in conclusion you wish they'd run as a ticket. Many people say that's not going to happen, but it suggests you must have gone back and forth. How did you come down where you came down 2 weeks ago?
And, Tom, that very well may be wishful thinking. It was a difficult decision made after long discussion. Our editorial board has high regard for Senator Obama, and we remain impressed with his ability to unite people. But for us, the decision came down to one factor, really, and that's experience. Senator Clinton's work, decades of work on such issues as health care on behalf of children, and more recently her work on the Senate Armed Services Committee, just impressed us. We like the specificity of many of her proposals, such as her plan to get the military out of Iraq, health care, and the economy.
Mm. Margaret Tolliv, this week that's kind of the theme that Hillary Clinton's been hitting in Texas, saying, look, I'm about solutions. He's about promises and pretty tough on that front. And yet in these contests in the last week or so, the exit polls indicate Barack Obama's been eating into some of what were seen as her strongholds. More blue-collar voters coming over, maybe more women coming over for Barack Obama. What does that portend, Margaret?
Well, it could be a real problem for Clinton in some of these key states like Ohio and Texas, if he's eating into more support among white women, among blue-collar workers. That's a problem in Ohio for her. If he is picking up more Latino support, that could be a problem in Texas. It's not just that she needs to win in Ohio and Texas, is that at least the way Obama's advisors read it, and I think the way Clinton's advisors read it as well, she has to win big in Ohio and Texas.
Win big, and she may, who knows what will happen, but these are big delegate pools. The Obama camp saying at this point they don't see how she can get the math together to pull the whole thing over into her column. Senator Obama kind of responding to some of that specificity issues this week. He was in Wisconsin at a GM auto plant in Janesville. Tried to speak to the criticisms that he's been a lot of inspiration and not enough substance in his rally appearances.
This is going to be a speech that's a little more detailed. It's going to be a little bit longer, not as many applause lines. But what I really want to do is talk from the heart about where I want to take this economy. And so I hope people will bear with me as we go through it.
And in he marched to a kind of economic plan for investments and government policy that some of the Clinton camp said, well, that sounds a lot like ours. Hillary Clinton talked about the duration of the campaign this week, said she's not discouraged by Barack Obama's recent victories.
You know, this is a long journey to the nomination. You know, some weeks, you know, one of us is up and the other's down, and then we reverse it.
Mark Pitch, we've got today news that Representative John Lewis, kind of elder statesman of the civil rights years, who had been a prominent black supporter of Hillary Clinton, a superdelegate, saying he may go over with his superdelegate vote to Barack Obama. Interesting. I mean, he's been on the Clinton bench team here for a long time now, but it brings the role of the superdelegates back to the fore, a sense that who knows where they end up when they finally step up and have their say, Mark.
Indeed, and the superdelegates are being heavily courted here in Wisconsin. One of my colleagues at our newspaper profiled a young early 20s college student, UW-Madison, who is a superdelegate. When Clinton was in town, she made a point of taking him out for coffee. When Barack Obama spoke to nearly 20,000 people here on Tuesday night. He made sure to give this fellow 10 minutes of his time before going out to speak. I'm sure that over the next few days he'll have a lot of other opportunities to talk to candidates and their surrogates. And so the hard press is on here in Wisconsin to get those superdelegates on either the candidate side.
They're suddenly the most popular folks in town. Margaret Tolliff on the Republican side. President Bush this week, as we heard there at the top, saying kind things about John McCain's conservatism. And we're seeing stories on the wires just now saying that on Monday he will formally endorse John McCain in Texas. Does that swing the sort of reluctant conservatives into the McCain camp, Margaret?
You mean, given President Bush's extremely high approval ratings?
Wow.
I think President Bush, this is something President Bush probably needed to do in terms of a personal relationship with John McCain. They've had their hard times, but 4 years ago, and it probably wasn't easy for McCain, he stood up for President Bush, and now President Bush is doing the same for him. I thought that Mitt Romney's formal endorsement of McCain and request that his delegates should go toward him also are helping solidify his position. The party, at least most of the party, is rallying around McCain at this point officially and asking conservatives to get in line.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news with Margaret Tolliff of McClatchy Newspapers out of Washington Today, a national political correspondent there. Alicia Caldwell, who joins us from Denver, Colorado. She's on the editorial board, a writer there for the Denver Post. And Mark Pitch, joining us from Madison, Wisconsin. He's a government and politics reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. Senator John McCain began to go more heavily after the Democrats now that his rivals are falling back. So Mike Huckabee's still in there and Ron Paul, but nevertheless, speaking this week at a campaign event in Alexandria, Virginia, John McCain said that speeches by both Democrats running for president ring hollow.
To encourage a country with only rhetoric rather than sound and proven ideas, the trust and the strength and courage of free people is not a promise of hope. It's a platitude.
Not a promise of hope, it's a platitude. Barack Obama punching back the other way. Talked to a crowd of almost 20,000 in Madison, Wisconsin this week. He's increasingly looking to that general election matchup against John McCain.
Senator McCain said the other day that we might be mired for 100 years in Iraq. 100 years, which is reason enough not to give him 4 years in the White House.
Mark Pitch, a lot still to be decided here, but do we see the outlines, the beginnings of the, you know, Republican versus Democrat heavyweight round beginning to emerge here in these lines?
Well, that was one of the things that myself and other reporters found interesting about Senator Obama's speech here on Tuesday is that he took a few shots at McCain, but didn't mention Senator Clinton at all. And he was clearly looking down the road, inciting Senator McCain's record.
Margaret, some turmoil in Hillary Clinton's campaign organization, or at least certainly a big shuffling of the deck there. Big folks out, new folks up. Does that suggest that the Clinton campaign is what? Seeing Obama as having taken over the lead and scrambling to reverse that?
Yes, to some extent. I think they just see him as a much more serious opponent and threat to her nomination than they did several months ago. And who can blame them? I mean, he really, you know, it was a real shoot-the-moon candidacy, and they weren't expecting this to go beyond February. Neither were most news organizations. Now they realize that they have to reconfigure their strategy, everything from how the campaign is run to how she presents herself to what kind of money they need and how they need to spend it to how to use President Clinton in the campaign. And there has been a major reorganization, and it makes perfect sense to me to change some of the people at the top.
Strategist Mark Penn still in there at the top for Hillary Clinton. Here's a bit from a conference call on Wednesday where he focused on the Ohio and Texas primaries on March 4th, kind of ignoring the primaries that come before.
We expect change to begin March 4th. We start off there, I think, with both the time that we have to run a campaign and voters who believe, as Senator Clinton does, that she is in the solutions business and that that is a sharp contrast to an opponent who is in the promise business.
And here's Hillary Clinton herself in Texas saying to Barack Obama, come on down.
I want to congratulate Senator Obama on his recent victories and tell him to meet me in Texas. We're ready.
Margaret, Alicia, Mark, let's go to the phones. Dean, Deanie is calling from Cheshire, Connecticut. Hi, Deanie, you're on the air.
Hi. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well, thanks. What do you see?
Well, first of all, I love your show. I love the fact that you can take a nugget of wisdom out of anything that people say. That's awesome.
I'm trying.
I just have to say that I just feel that, first of all, the superdelegate system is completely egregious and needs to be reformed. But beyond that, I just don't feel, even as a woman, I'd love to see a woman as president, I don't feel that Hillary is electable. I think she is extremely polarizing. She represents the old status quo. And I think that the people who have come out for Obama are going to go home if she gets, you know, the superdelegates to make her the nominee. And I think that that's very demoralizing to the democracy. I think we should take a page out of the Republican playbook, and I really think she should consider for the future of this planet getting out of the race.
But let's look at the delegate totals at the moment. You say she's unelectable, but she's right there neck and neck with Barack Obama, at least in the Democratic primaries. She's done pretty well for herself.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter what the Democrats think. It matters what the independents and people that we can bring over from the Republicans, disenfranchised, you know, real Republicans, true conservatives who see the Bush administration as, you know, having betrayed their values in terms of economic conservatism, in terms of the budget. These are the people that are going to make or break this election, and they are not going to come over to Hillary Clinton. And as much as I would love to see her as president, it really doesn't matter what the hardcore Democrats and old establishment folks or even me as a MoveOn.org member think. It matters what the independents, the new voters, the young, the people that are coming out in droves, they're going to make or break this election, and she just doesn't have it with them.
Deanie, we've got the perspective, and let us get one more right here from Solon, Iowa. Bruce is on the line. Hi, Bruce. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I hear this word experience thrown around a lot in contrasting Hillary Clinton with Barack Obama. And I've been reading about the Vietnam War lately and recognizing that Lyndon Johnson had all the experience in the world and still led us down the path to a disastrous war.
And the best and the brightest, as Halberstam called them, all around him.
Pardon me?
And the best and the brightest, as David Halberstam.
The best and the brightest, most highly educated. And so, as mentioned, I'm just wanting to problematize or poke holes in this word experience. I mean, the person from the Wisconsin State Journal, I believe, said that experience was the reason for supporting Clinton over Obama. But I think it's thrown around too loosely. The history of the country is not considered in terms of what experience has given us in terms of leadership, which is really much more important, effective leadership down the right road.
Bruce, let me ask you, how do you think it may work if and when, and we hear a little bit of already in the tape today, John McCain, 70-something John McCain, turns around and paints both Democratic contenders as inexperienced compared to him. Do you think that can be a winning theme for the GOP, presumptive nominee in the fall?
I really don't think so, as long as the Democrats emphasize the fact that him touting experience and taking us on a further disastrous course in Iraq, I think that's just open for all kinds of ammunition for the Democrats, and they should just fire it constantly, because for a lot of us, the war is still the central issue.
Alicia Caldwell, let us bring this back to you in Denver. A lot of excitement will be rolling your way in August, but as these calls indicate, you know, could be a lot of tension and internal conflict for the Democrats there as well. I mean, in Denver, is there talk of a party, kind of civil war tumbling all the way into the convention hall there?
Oh, absolutely. There is. I think our caller, Deanie, accurately summarized the potential fractures that might occur if the superdelegates, in essence, override what the pledged delegates have come to. And yes, it could. There could be all kinds of floor fights and great political battles right here in Denver. But I think the Democrats have to be careful about alienating the rank and file by the superdelegates overriding their decisions.
Mark Pitch, what are you hearing in Wisconsin about this demographic kind of breakdown within the Democratic Party? I don't mean breakdown like a car breaking down. I mean just looking at the numbers here. Obama has drawn more effectively from better educated, a little more affluent, and from the black community in particular. Hillary has drawn more strongly from women. Obama better with white men, Hillary better with blue collar. Can you tell anything about where Wisconsin may be leaning along those lines? Obama reaching out at the assembly line there, trying to get that working person's vote?
Sure. You could, as I said earlier, the state is pretty diverse, and one could make a pretty strong or plausible case for Democrats in the state lining up for either candidate. There is still a strong blue-collar population here. The African-American population is relatively small, and but you do have a lot of young people who, when they're energized, will get out and vote. We saw that in the 2006 election when there was a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage on the ballot. The organizers organized college campuses, and college students came out in droves to vote against the amendment. They weren't successful, but what they did do is they helped send the state Senate in control of the Democrats and closed the gap that the Republicans had in the majority in the state assembly. And Senator Obama is certainly trying to energize students here in the state, and a couple of them that I even talked to after his speech on Tuesday told me that this was the best experience of their lives. And that sort of gives you an indication of what young people are taking away from their meetings with Senator Obama.
Let's get a call from Avon, Connecticut. Norma, you're on the air.
Hi. I certainly agree with most of what your Democratic call-in people have said. We certainly do have to keep, especially the young people that are now coming to the party, because that's the future of our party. But one weakness of Hillary's that hasn't been talked about much is the role of Bill Clinton in the White House. He was a great, great disappointment at the end of his time in the White House to the Democrats. I think he did a lot of damage to our party. Secondly, the way that he acted in South Carolina was shameful. And so the Republicans are already picking this up. One of the things that I heard was, what is Bill Clinton going to be doing roaming the halls of the White House with nothing to do? And that was certainly one of the things that I considered in changing my initial support of Hillary to Barack Obama.
Yeah, been a little more low-key, I think, Mark Pitch, in Wisconsin. Have we got that right, Bill Clinton?
Yes, he was in his talks yesterday. He was much more conciliatory toward Senator Obama and didn't say anything inflammatory like he said in South Carolina. But he did repeat the themes that you heard earlier with Mark Penn, which is that Hillary Clinton's in the solution business, Barack Obama's in the promise business.
I guess that's the new message. Let's get one more here from Quincy, Massachusetts. Susie, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. How you doing? My comment, I guess, would be that if it is, ultimately, I believe it's going to end up being McCain and Obama on the ticket, and I'm just not happy with either one. I believe McCain will have us in the Middle East for, like he said, many, many years. I believe he'll get involved with Iran, which really scares me. I believe he's very inept when it comes to the economy, because I've listened to all the debates. He doesn't really know much, I mean, in my opinion. And Obama, I believe he's very bright in many ways, but I believe he's just going to spend, more programs with money we don't have. So honestly, I don't want to vote for either of them. I'm just not happy.
Susie, let me put that to our panel. President Bush, of course, looking out on this and talking this last week on Sunday, Fox News reporter Chris Wallace asked him to explain why he would describe John McCain as a true conservative.
if John's the nominee, he has got some convincing to do to convince people that he is a solid conservative. And I'd be glad to help him if he is the nominee.
Why do
he is a conservative. Look, he's very strong on national defense. He's tough fiscally. He believes the tax cuts ought to be permanent. He's pro-life. I mean, his principles are sound and solid as far as I'm concerned.
And we still got Mike Huckabee in there saying, don't count me out. Here he was in Richmond, Virginia, saying the race isn't over for him yet.
The national media has done everything possible to sort of say that it's an inevitable conclusion, that there's no point in going on. I mean, they've tried to basically just end the game. And, you know, the whistle hasn't blown for me yet.
Margaret Tolliff, has the whistle, in fact, effectively blown here? Mitt Romney now trying to give a couple hundred delegates plus to John McCain. Huckabee still hanging in there. But what's that all about? How do you read it, Margaret?
I say the whistle's like in the referee's mouth, and the referee's really itching to blow the whistle. I mean, listen, McCain could get sick in the next week and a half or say something really stupid. Anything could happen. But right now it would take something like that to change the momentum of what's going on. If Romney's delegates don't put John McCain over the top, they come very close to putting him over the top. And if I can, I just want to add one thing about the idea of the previous caller and not really liking either candidate. I think that in the Democratic race, a really interesting problem is the idea of electability for Hillary Clinton versus how Obama will actually perform if he were to be the nominee and if he were to be elected. And I think for superdelegates on the Democratic side, this is the real challenge, that many of them are self-interested. For example, if I'm a superdelegate who's standing for office next November, I want high turnout. And all the conventional wisdom says that you're more likely to have higher turnout for Democrats and lower turnout for Republicans if Obama's the nominee. But then let's say Obama gets elected. Is he going to be a good president? Would he have any idea what to do? Who are his advisors going to be? Who's his cabinet going to be? I mean, he is totally untested. It is totally a leap of faith. I know he's got a very short record in the U.S. Senate and a record in the state legislature in his home state, but that's really – it's different. And so these are the challenges. With McCain, the challenges are a lot of Republicans really don't like him. They may think he's their best chance at getting elected, but they don't love him, you know, and and he's been a prisoner of war. He's older. There are a lot of unknowns. There are a lot of wild cards. It's different being in the Senate than it would be being the president of the United States.
Alicia, wild cards on both sides here. But what about this experience debate in your circles there in Colorado? You've endorsed Hillary. There stands Obama, though. He says, I'm doing something different here, kind of inspiration to change the whole political atmosphere. Do you think he'll be, is he now dogged by an experience question, or is that also a kind of self-interested argument against him?
I think it's both. It is a self-interested argument, but there is a lot to be said for his ability to bring people together, which he's demonstrated in these primaries and caucuses. When he came here to Denver a couple of weeks ago, something like 16,000 people went to the University of Denver to see him standing out in the cold at 4 o'clock in the morning. This is not an unusual story. It's just illustrative of his ability to really motivate people, and there's a lot to be said for that. However, I think Margaret's exactly right on that is the question that superdelegates are debating in their head. Do we want somebody who has some proven experience, or do we want somebody who we really think can beat the Republicans?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. Obama takes the lead. Clinton vows to fight spy battles in Washington. Bernanke says, watch out on the economy. Had celebrations and a sad passing this week. The writers' strike ended. The Daily Show's Jon Stewart celebrated.
Words in the prompter, script on my desk, vending machine upstairs out of Funyuns. The writers are back!
California Congressman Tom Lantos, the only Holocaust survivor ever to serve in the U.S. Congress, died Monday at 80. He was an outspoken critic of the war.
We need to get out of Iraq for that country's sake and for our own. It is time to go, and to go now.
A big and special voice goes right there. And for the first time in history, a beagle took the top prize at the Westminster Dog Show. His name, Uno.
You are absolutely superb, beautiful lineup. Thank you very much. May I have the beagle?
Yes, the beagle!
The beagle, and off they go. We've been joined by Margaret Tolub of McClatchy Newspapers from Washington, Alicia Caldwell from the Denver Post, editorial board writer there, and Mark Pitch joins us from Madison, Wisconsin, politics reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. Margaret, let me go to you on the FISA business. President Bush pushing very, very hard, saying, look, I want an extension. I want new legislation here that will let this surveillance go on and will give immunity to the private communications companies that make it possible. What's the foot dragging in the Senate, Margaret?
You mean the foot dragging in the Senate, or do you mean the House's willingness to walk out on it and go home for a week?
Well, I mean, the House has already given him what he wants, if I've got that right. And the Senate saying, not so fast. The president saying, I'm going to put off my whole trip to Africa if you don't give it to me, and give it to me now.
The immunity for the telecom providers has been on again, off again, the sticking point in this thing, or at least the symptom of the sticking point in this thing. I think really underlying all of it, the Democrats are furious that the president has successfully put them in a box on the surveillance stuff, really pitting their sort of First Amendment platform against the idea that the blood will be on their hands if there's another terrorist attack. And the House, you know, wasn't prepared to play the game this week, and they wanted another extension, and they were too divided amongst themselves. And so they just said, well, too bad. We're just leaving. We're going. And that's where things lay. And I was surprised to see the Democrats really willing to challenge President Bush, but I think they're feeling sort of full of bravado because they think they're going to win the next presidential election. And partly they just don't really think that this is going to strip President Bush of his ability to have his administration surveil people who are real terrorism threats. And so they've just decided, you know, to go for broke on it, at least for, you know, a couple weeks so they can come back.
And we've got to wonder if this doesn't set up another big issue for the fall campaign. Here's one-time Democratic contender for the Democratic nomination, Senator Chris Dodd, who was leading the effort to block retroactive immunity for these corporations from the revision of the 30-year-old Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act.
To literally vacuum clean up everything that came in. Probably the single largest invasion of privacy in the history of our country. All done without a warrant, without a court order.
Here's Missouri Republican Kit Bond. He voted to keep immunity in the FISA bill for these companies, saying that it's necessary to avoid terrorist attacks.
If we permit the carriers who may or may not have participated in this to be sued in court, then the most important partners the government has, the private sector, will be discouraged from assisting us in the future.
Alicia Caldwell in Denver, do you have the sense that this issue of privacy, civil rights, surveillance really has the American public's attention right now? Could this blow back up into a big issue as we head toward November?
It's very complicated, Tom, and I think that's part of the problem. And I think there are quite a few misconceptions out there about what's on the table this week in Washington and what authority the administration still has to do the surveillance it says it needs to do. For instance, this failure to extend the Protect America Act does not take away the administration's ability to listen in. It just means that they have to go to the FISA court, and this system has existed since 1978.
Longstanding, but the president's pushing and pushing and pushing to get this concretized and pushed forward. How do you read that? A president who believes this has to happen, a president who believes in a bigger sense of executive authority and wants to leave that as part of his legacy, Alicia?
Yes, that's right. And what this change would do would be, in essence, at its core, to shift the authority to approve wiretapping from the FISA court system, a secret court, to the administration. And a lot of people, including myself, would see that as an unacceptable expansion of presidential power.
Mark Pitch, does this raise temperatures in Wisconsin these days, or has the issue kind of fallen back into the congressional slag heap?
Well, I could. I'd suggest that the presidential campaign here has captured most folks' attention. But this is Madison, Wisconsin, right? You know, the Berkeley of the East, the People's Republic of Madison, 30 square miles surrounded by reality. So there is a very strong strain of liberalism and even far leftism here in Madison, where there has been a lot of concern about the decrease of privacy under the Bush administration and the Iraq war, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Let's get a call from Rick on this in Iowa City, Iowa. Hi, Rick, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was just wondering why, if it's a large telecommunications corporation, it's referred to as retroactive immunity, and if it's a hardworking person, it's called amnesty for the immigrants. I'll take my answer off the air.
Oh, we got to get high concept here to make this equation, but... yeah, your point taken. Look back, and we've got two different descriptions of two different. I'm not sure units in the American universe. There, point taken. And thanks, Rick, very much for your call. Speaking of corporations, the economy very much in the news this week. Hank Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, and Ben Bernanke at the Fed, both sounding kind of gloomy, and all kinds of indicators. From Wall Street and beyond, Margaret Tolev, that we may not be anywhere near the end of this subprime lending credit crunch shakeout.
And it was a fairly sugar-coated testimony at that, and the market still tanked yesterday. So what if they came out and said what they really thought, right? No, the economy's in bad shape, and any admission of that drives the market further down, and it's not a good situation, and it'll definitely affect people's mood heading into November.
But, of course, it was supposed that came with the hint that there may be more interest rate cuts is supposed to help the market go up. Here's Fed Chief Ben Bernanke in that Senate Banking Committee meeting yesterday, indicating the American economy not looking so good.
In part as the result of the developments in financial markets, the outlook for the economy has worsened in recent months, and the downside risks to growth have increased.
Downside risks to growth have increased. Take us to the Mile High City, Alicia Caldwell. You're a long way from the canyons of Wall Street, but what's the economic sense out in your neck of the woods these days?
Well, we have a real mixed bag here in Colorado. The 2007 sales tax revenues, which are an important index of Colorado consumer spending, were actually 40% higher than predicted. So that's a good sign. Unemployment is fairly stable, hovering around 4.5%. But on the downside, Colorado's been hit particularly hard by foreclosures. In 2006, the state had the highest foreclosure rate in the country and the second highest in 2007. Now, this is depressed real estate prices, and it's a significant pressure. But since other indicators haven't really gone into the tank yet, we're still basically okay in Colorado.
And Mark, what about from your perch there in Wisconsin? Look out across your local economy. What kind of indicators do you see?
We're seeing a couple of things. One is state tax collections are down. We're projected to have a $650 million shortfall this year, and that's going to be tough to make up. Foreclosures have been up. We had a report this morning that home sales in 2007 were down 9% compared to the previous year, but at the same time, at least in our county here, home prices rose ever so slightly by about 0.5%. So what the folks in the real estate industry are saying is that prices are remaining stable, but there are just simply more houses on the market that are, and they're taking longer to sell. And we are seeing slight increases in grocery prices and things of that sort.
And how about on the employment front? We saw Obama, you know, on the assembly line the other day. What has Wisconsin seen when it comes to jobs?
We are seeing some loss in manufacturing jobs. We have a GM plant down in Janesville where Senator Obama spoke. There are buyouts on the table there. In Madison here, we're seeing a little ebb and flow in terms of high-tech jobs because of the University of Wisconsin. We have a fair number of those types of companies. Every once in a while, you'll see a new company started and hire 50 people, but some, you know, another company that's been around for 5 years cuts back on 20, so we're seeing a little bit of that as well.
Yeah, there's an American story. Of course, those new jobs need to stay ahead of those lost jobs. Let's get a call from Larry in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Larry, you're on the air.
Yes, when you talk about the economy, I think it's well documented that the party in power does not do well when the economy is not good. And whether the economy is or is not good, I think the perception among the people, because everything we read is how bad it is, whether it is or not, does not bode well for the Republicans. Along the same lines, you know, we haven't elected a senator as president since 1960. McCain, all three of the candidates who most likely would be elected are senators. McCain has the longest record, which doesn't bode well for him. He also yesterday reversed himself and voted on the waterboarding issue, although he had come out before and said it was illegal. And, you know, I just think that when you talk about experience versus action, I'm amazed when I hear the candidates say, well, when I'm president, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. You know, they also have 535 members of Congress in there that they have to deal with, too. And I think Obama offers the best hope because of his wanting to reach out to people. As it was pointed out earlier, it doesn't really make any difference what the solid Democrats or Republicans are going to vote. It's those that are fluid and the independents. And as time goes on and more people get to hear Barack Obama, and here in Iowa, of course, we got to hear all of the people. And I was a John Edwards supporter 4 years ago and again this year. But when I heard Barack Obama, I said, I have no problem supporting this person.
Brought you right around, even though he's a senator. Questions about the economy. Of course, the economy is supposed to be great out in your corn country neck of the woods with all these high crop prices, Larry.
It's not bad, except that the thing you have to realize is that all of the input costs have jumped tremendously. The cost of fuel, fertilizer, machinery. You can't buy a new tractor, combine, or corn planter now because of the demand. We may be shielded more than the rest of the nation, but we're still going to feel some of it.
Larry, thanks for your call. Let me get another from Wyckoff, New Jersey, and Henri. Henri, you're on the air.
I am. Hello. My question is, I understand the economy issue is a difficult one for a lot of people, but you know, given the recent announcement by the administration that they're going to have, you know, trials that will surely, you know, move into the election cycle, is it
trials? You mean for the six alleged 9/11 folks in Guantanamo?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's maybe I'm a bit cynical, but it seems to me that you know the issue has worked so well for the GOP in the past, namely bringing up terrorism issues right around election time. Is this them sort of playing that card again? I'd love to hear what your guests think about that.
Well, talk about a heavyweight matchup, 9/11, if you can revive all that, versus real economic trouble. Alicia Caldwell, do some political analysis for us here. Which carries more throw weight in a presidential election season?
Well, President Bush has shown time and again his ability to invoke the images of 9/11 to muster some support for what he'd like to do. I have some concerns specifically about the 9/11 trials and the efficacy of the tribunals and what this process says to the rest of the world about our country. These tribunals created by the Military Commissions Act of 2006 are untested. Only one person has gone through this system, and that was a plea bargain situation.
Yeah, we heard a lot about that right here yesterday, and we can see, you know, big questions being raised there. I want to ask about Roger Clemens in the baseball business in Congress this week. We've got one caller on that, Nashua, New Hampshire. Let's go to Joel.
Hi.
Hi, Joel. Here we're hearing about trials in Guantanamo, the nation's economy, the future of each party, and our democracy. What do you make of steroids and growth hormone on the Congress's front burner?
From my agenda, from my perspective, it's not worth spending 15 seconds of any congressional staffer's time. It drives me crazy that it's in the news. Can you explain to me what the members of Congress know that I don't know?
Margaret Tolliv, let us put that on your plate. What puts Roger Clemens there with his baseball chemical history with everything else that's going on in this country?
Well, I have to say that the day of the hearings, I was trying to, I was in Washington, I was trying to catch coverage of the Obama speech in Wisconsin because I wasn't there, and no one was carrying it because they were involved in detailed discussion about Roger Clemens' buttocks and, you know, various aspects of it.
And the boil thereon, oh my God.
That's right, exactly, textural questions. And I just was like, what are they doing, you know? And then I have since come to learn, I read an article that talked about Henry Waxman, the chairman of the committee, saying, hey, he never wanted to have the hearing in the first place. It was Clemens and his lawyers who demanded to have it to clear his good name. I'm going to guess that, you know, the reality is sort of halfway in between, but it made me feel a little bit better to know that Clemens was demanding it from the outset. I still think, apparently, right before the end, Clemens and his attorneys said, never mind, we want out, forget it. And at that point, Waxman, you know, Waxman's not going to call it off because Clemens wants him to call it off. He's only more determined to do it. So it turned into this, I think it sort of probably ended up casting a bad pall on everybody involved. But
no shortage.
I know more about Roger Clemens than I ever wanted to. That's true.
Right. In all his parts, and no shortage of TV cameras there to help us all to do it. Mark Page, we've got just 10 seconds here. You've covered Wisconsin politics a long time. High interest for Tuesday's primary?
There will be a high interest, particularly on the Democratic side. We're going to be watching the weather, though.
Been cold.
An unexpected storm could wreak havoc on the turnout.
Mark Pitch at the Wisconsin State Journal in Madison, thanks very much for being with us. Alicia Caldwell at the Denver Post, thanks to you. And Margaret Tolliv with McClatchy Newspapers, thanks to all of you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Mm-hmm.